Broadcasting.
Good afternoon. I'm opening this meeting of the House Committee on Revenue. It's Thursday, May 20th. Thank you, everyone, for your patience. As we had a delayed start time, the House was in floor session, and we needed a few minutes for committee members to make the transition from being in the House session to get back to offices and get ready for this meeting. So thank you again for your patience. Can we have a roll call for attendance, please?
Representative Levy.
Present by audio only.
Representative Marsh.
Marsh is here by video.
Representative Smith.
Representative Smith is present by video.
Representative Valderrama.
Valderrama present by video.
Vice Chair Pham.
Pham is present by video.
Vice Chair Reschke.
Reschke present by video.
Madam Chair Nathanson.
Nathanson present by video. Thank you. We have four work sessions on our agenda today. A couple of them are for discussion purposes only. A couple of them we will very likely have motions and move the bills out of committee. We'll take the items in the order in which the agenda is printed. I'm opening a work session on House Bill 2551A for discussion purposes only.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Kyle Easton, Legislative Revenue Office. And House Bill 2551A, just as a refresher, this is a measure relating to one of your 11 tax credits that are up for their sunset review this session. In this case, 2551 is a six-year sunset extension of the tax credit available to taxpayers that make contributions to the individual development account. So the committee heard testimony on this back on April 29th. Again, in the bill, there's the six-year sunset extension. There's also a modification to the timing of when a donation can be made and still qualify for the credit. And that's just moving that timing closer to the April 15th deadline of when a taxpayer would file their taxes. And that's just the idea there is to shorten the time frame in which a contribution is made and the benefit of the credit is received by the taxpayer on their tax return. And there's also a series of programmatic changes being made to the underlying individual development account program. We do have the paperwork up in the meeting materials. Both the fiscal is a minimal, the revenue impact statement that's issued is about $13.5 million per biennium from extending the sunset. And then there's also some materials related or sourced from legislative revenues tax credit report that we prepare before the 2021 legislative session relating to all the tax credits up to their sunset review. So there's some materials in OLIS available as well.
Thank you. Committee members, this is a good time now to ask questions of Mr. Easton about how the bill works, anything technical or about the program itself, or have some discussion. And I'll wait to see if, I'll wait another minute or two to see if anyone's looking to raise a hand. And I'm also pausing a few extra seconds since Rep. Levy is with us by phone to make sure that she has an opportunity to chime in by voice if she is trying to be recognized. Representative Reschke, and then Representative Pham.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Easton, this was the bill where, as I recall, is extends to April 15th instead of just from calendar year to calendar year. And I'm just clarifying, will there be something on the tax form that says I want to take it in the previous year, or I want to apply to not take it this year and apply it to the next time I file taxes, say if I make that claim on February 22nd.
Yeah, Representative Reschke, I would think when the contribution is made to the individual development account, in this case, neighborhood partnerships, when that contribution is made, at that time is where they would really, the taxpayer would need to decide what year that contribution is being made to. So that'd be in the certification process. And that's for two reasons. One, so they can certify it for the right tax year. And then also, we do have an overall limit on the amount of credits that can be certified in any year. So they would have to be checking against that limit. So I would think it'd be coming on the certification side. I don't know on the return whether or not it's specified. I don't think it matters when that contribution is made. It would be the onus of the taxpayer of claiming that in the correct tax year.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure there was a process in place to declare it one way or the other. And it sounds like there is, so thank you.
Representative Pham.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to follow up on the question that I had asked earlier on the public hearing, and I just wanted to share the answer that I got for the whole committee, because I had asked about why the income threshold was set at 80% annual average median income, AMI, and they wrote back to me a very long, extensive email, which I really appreciate all the information that really satisfied my answers. But they explained that the vast majority of the savers in the IDA program are at or below 50% AMI, but they said that one reason they include still folks near 80% AMI income levels is because of the variance between what incomes look like county to county, and that in some rural counties, 80% AMI is much lower. For example, in Harney County, it's $32,000 for a family of one, and that's far lower than 80% in Multnomah County, which is $51,000. And so just, you know, in the example of that family saving for higher education or something else, they wouldn't want to preclude a Harney County family from saving towards tuition versus just because of the different income levels in county. So that was super helpful for me to understand, and I just wanted to share that with the whole committee.
Thank you. Any other questions or discussion? Before I close the work session on House Bill 2551. I'm not seeing anything else. I'm closing the work session on 2551A. I'm now opening a work session on House Bill 3302.
Okay, Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3302 is a bill proposing to create a new income tax credit that would be available to individuals or corporations that make contributions to a tax-exempt workforce training organization. So we do have a -2 amendment to the underlying introduced version of 3302. The changes in the -2, there's a few changes in there. One is changing the amount of the potential tax credit for the contributions being made. In the introduced version right now, the limit, there's a dollar limit that's $500 for individuals or up to $5,000 for corporations. The -2 amendment would cut that in half, $250 for individuals or $2,500 for corporations. Included in the -2 amendment are new requirements for the nonprofit organizations to which would receive these contributions. So there is a requirement that the organization would be part of the National Taxonomy of Exempt Entities Code, and there's specific codes that are listed in the -2 amendment that would limit to a further extent the types of organizations that could qualify to receive these creditable donations. The other change being made is, or two other changes of significance. One is replacing Department of Revenue with Department of Justice as the certifying agency, and then also creating a, more or less an offset for a taxpayer if they're claiming the contribution as a charitable deduction. They would more or less have to choose on their Oregon tax return whether to claim the itemized deduction for the charitable contribution or claim this credit. But again, the underlying bill and the -2 amendment would create a new tax credit, and it would be applicable to tax years beginning on or after January 1st, 2021, and before January 1st, 2031.
Thank you. Committee members, any questions for Mr. Easton? And while I wait for hands, I'll ask Representative Reschke. I see your hand is up, and I wanted to ask you to explain the amendment a little bit more, to give us some examples of who, what kind of entities qualify now, how broad it was, but what it's limited to now.
Right. Thank you, Madam Chair. I think Mr. Easton did a good job describing all the particulars to your specific question. Qualifying agencies, there's a list of, I don't know, about 15 codes that can be used to describe a nonprofit, and this narrows it down to four, and those four are vocational counseling, guidance and testing, vocational testing, sheltered remunerative employment work activity center, and employment job related NEC. So the purpose of all the things that were added, except for the change from Department of Revenue to Department of Justice, was that was to make it easier to claim the credit and process the credit. But the other four items that were changed were to narrow the scope. So in the RIS right now, we don't have a number yet. And so my concern with all tax credits is, how much do they cost? Can we afford it? And is this the right place to be spending the money? So that's kind of the way I look through these tax credits. And I just wanted to make sure that we could add a new one, kind of see how it goes and where it goes without breaking the piggy bank.
Thank you. I know that someone has raised a hand. It's showing up on a screen, but I can't identify where. Rep Pham.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I do also see, I saw a hand that wasn't mine raised before me, but I don't know who it is either.
Yeah, I see it still. Hang on just a second, Rep Pham.
It's Representative Smith.
Thank you. Representative Smith, I'm going to take you next.
Oh, you know, Rep Smith can go, or I can go ahead. I just wanted to share, thank you so much, Rep Reschke, for this bill and the amendment. I share your concern that we want to make sure that we're very careful and thoughtful about these tax credits, because we want to make sure that we're shepherding our public funds very carefully. I do have to admit, I have some concerns about the precedent that we're setting with nonprofit organizations in terms of why these particular nonprofits get their charitable contributions essentially, I don't know how to say, reimbursed through this tax credit. When people make charitable contributions to other nonprofits, they won't be getting that same kind of tax credit. So I just wanted to mark some that concern. But I do appreciate the intention behind supporting these workforce development programs.
Madam Chair, may I respond?
Sure. And then we will get to Rep. Smith in just a moment.
Thank you. And thank you, Madam Chair and Rep. Pham, for that comment. One of the things that we did do is we said you couldn't take a deduction and then get the credit. So this kind of is the amendment allows for an either or, so that people aren't double dipping into the system, as it were. But we can certainly have further conversations. I'm interested, again, my biggest interest at this point then is, if we move it forward, is to see what the bill is going to be.
Thank you for that clarification. I didn't know that. Thank you.
Representative Smith. Representative Smith, if you're trying to connect with us, I'm happy to wait another few seconds or come back to you.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I'm seeing where it says he's on hold, but I don't know what that means.
Representative Valderrama, let's hear from you now, and we'll come back to Rep. Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate Representative Breschke, you clarifying that last bit for me as well. I think that that was really helpful. I also just wanted to lift up that I do think in the event of a decision around choosing the tax credit, I also have similar concerns, you know, just in terms of a donation and I think the intent of a donation being something that, you know, is a, generally a gift, right? And so to be able to get, you know, that back in that way, I'm just not sure that that really aligns with the initial intention there. So, and also just thinking, you know, I appreciate the broader, the amendment and how it includes broader entities as well, but just wanted to share that that's still a concern that I have and would love the opportunity to review the amendment a little bit more too.
And may I respond, Madam Chair?
Sure.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Rep. Valderrama, I really appreciate that. Just so you get a little bit of background on how I approach a new tax credit like this is I like to try to start small and narrow and see if it has any merit, because we don't know if anybody's going to take advantage of this or if it's going to be a wild success, and we have to come back and narrow it even further. So that's what I've tried to do, is try to make it narrow in scope, took the amount, the original amount, and cut them in half as far as what's able to be claimed as a tax credit, and then just kind of see where it goes from there. But it's, again, my intent is to keep it small and narrow and see what it does. And on the topic of job training, what this is really trying to focus on, getting dollars into job training organizations, at least in my district, that's a big, big need. And I'm sure it's throughout all of Oregon, helping people either whether they're coming out of recovery or addiction and then getting back into the workforce, or they just need a new skill. Some of these nonprofits are very, very helpful in that way. So that's the intent behind it.
It looks like we might have a good connection with Rep. Smith now. Rep. Smith, I see a hand up for you.
Actually, I apologize, Madam Chair. Representative Breschke just answered the exact question I was gonna ask. So thank you.
Do you have anything to add, though, at this time?
I'm very supportive of this. This is an extraordinarily important piece of legislation for, I believe, the entire state of Oregon, but particularly in my district. I have a county population, Madam Chair, of 14,000 people. And in that 14,000 people, we have over 300 jobs available, all of which could be classified as family wage or near family wage. And we can't find the workforce to fill those positions. And Lam Weston caught a hold of me here just a couple of days ago and shared with me that at the end of this month, they're gonna have another 100 positions needed on top of that because of their growth. So I think Rep. Breschke really is on to something great, and I'm hoping we can support it for those Oregonians who could benefit from this opportunity. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions or comments? Representative Marsh.
Thank you, Chair. I, too, support the bill. And I just wanted to note, because it's relevant to later bills we're going to be looking at, I think there's a tremendous opportunity down in Rep. Breschke's region for training work around renewable energy. There are projects going on down there. We hear reports that there are not workers who are trained to do those projects. So I just want to call out the kind of interesting new technologies that I think are available that could be subject to programs supported by these tax credits.
Thank you, Representative Marsh. Rep. Breschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Marsh, thank you for that comment. I see the foreshadowing in that comment for something we might be dealing with soon. So I do appreciate that. Thank you.
I'll wait another few minutes or at least a few seconds in case Representative Levy is trying to get our attention. Otherwise, if there are no more questions or conversation, we could have an amendment. I mean, a motion for an amendment.
So Chair Nathanson, I move to adopt the dash two amendments to House Bill 3302.
Vice Chair Reschke moves it says A52, but we're talking about A2 amendment. Is that correct?
I think it's just the dash two.
Yeah, amendment to House Bill 3302. Is there discussion? I don't see any. Let's have a roll call vote.
Representative Levy.
Levy votes yes.
Representative Marsh.
Marsh votes yes.
Representative Smith.
Representative Smith votes no. Oh, I'm sorry. That was a different piece of legislation. I'm sorry. Sorry. I had to bring levity.
I'm of the elephant party. I won't forget.
Rep Smith, just for the record, would you say out loud your vote now?
I'm sorry, gang. Representative Smith votes aye.
Representative Valderrama.
Valderrama votes aye.
Vice Chair Pham.
Pham votes aye.
Vice Chair Reschke.
Reschke votes aye.
Madam Chair Nathanson.
Nathanson votes aye. Motion passes. That was on the amendment.
Chair Nathanson, I move House Bill 3302 as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Tax Expenditures.
Thank you, Vice Chair Reschke moves House Bill 3302 as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Tax Expenditures. Is there discussion? We're on the main motion for the bill now. We're ready for a roll call vote.
Representative Levy.
Levy votes yes.
Representative Marsh.
Marsh votes yes.
Representative Smith.
Representative Smith votes aye.
Representative Valderrama.
Valderrama votes no.
Vice Chair Pham.
Pham votes no.
Vice Chair Reschke.
Reschke votes aye.
Madam Chair Nathanson.
Nathanson votes aye. Motion passes. And we're not assigning a carrier because this is next going to the Joint Committee on Tax Expenditures. That completes the business on 3302. I'm closing the work session on 3302. I'm opening a work session now on House Bill 2357A for discussion purposes only.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, if you recall, House Bill 2357A is the bill that reallocates the privilege tax, the portion that goes to the Oregon Forest Resources Institute, and newly creates a sound forestry account. There's a dash seven, and this would do a couple things. It removes the consideration of producer status in the OFRI board appointments, and it also specifies that the two voting members for environmental community, fish and wildlife, would be appointed by the Senate president and the Speaker of the House.
Thank you. Committee members, now is an opportunity for questions or discussion. Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I'll get the discussion going. I'm not a big fan of the bill. I have several reasons why, but I'll just try to articulate a few of them and see where the discussion goes, and then maybe bring in some more if needed. But I'll just start with a few things. One is the bill talks about it and needing to have somebody on the board with a conservation perspective, but doesn't define what that is. And so we could go round and round. Does conservation mean that trees grow to be old growth until they die? Does that mean they grow to 80 years old instead of being harvested at 40 years old? Again, it doesn't provide enough definition in the bill right now on what a conservation perspective means. Some other things are that OFRI, in this bill, the rate would be set by the Board of Forestry, and no other commodities commission gets to do that. So no other commodities commission has that kind of thing. They do set their own rates. And so for this to be moved from OFRI itself to the Board of Forestry would be very unique, and I'd need to hear why that is necessary. I think I'll just end real quick here and let somebody else talk if they'd like, but the Secretary of State is doing an audit on this, on OFRI, and that's due here mid-June, end of June, something like that. And I really think we ought to wait and see what the Secretary of State's office says as to the particular issues with OFRI, and then take action in 2022 if necessary. So I just don't want to get the cart ahead of the cart in front of the horse, as it were. Look at that in detail and think through that report from the Secretary of State before we take any action. Thank you.
Thank you. Listening to Representative Reschke's points, I would like to ask if Ms. McGovern might have some information. I'll tell you in a minute what I'm asking for. And if not Ms. McGovern, perhaps someone else who participated in writing the bill might have an answer. One of the questions is, what is a conservation perspective if it's not defined in the bill? Is there any other statutory guidance somewhere else to help define what that would be? Sometimes we find that there are definitions in other places, for example.
Chair Nathanson, a couple of responses to that. On the fly, I don't know if it's somewhere else in statute, and I would have to check, nor do I know what the intent behind the specific term conservation. I think we do have someone else in the room, if you'd rather try and get some of that at the moment.
Yes, I'd like to call on Mr. Stevens now, if you're here.
Yes, Chair Nathanson, can you hear me?
Yes, just be sure to identify yourself.
Great. My name is Sean Stevens, and I'm with Oregon Wild. And we were supportive of the bill, and I think I can try to address that a little bit. I think that if Vice Chair Reschke's concern is, you know, is a one to take into consideration. Currently, the OFRI board is made up of members of the timber industry, different size producers, as how it's written in statute. And then there's a public representative, and that public representative is appointed by the Senate president and the speaker. And the amendment, the dash seven, is to put the conservation and the fish and wildlife members that have been proposed in the same way, that the speaker and the president would jointly put those people on the board. And I guess for just a little bit of background, this amendment was made at the suggestion of Chair Witt in House Agriculture and Natural Resources. He felt that that was an appropriate addition to the board. And so I think some of the motivation around the language is probably good to check in with Chair Witt. From our perspective, one of the other things to note in the current legislation for that public representative, that person was actually explicitly prohibited from having any affiliation with an environmental organization. And I think there's maybe a similar issue there where there's not perfect definitions around what that means in the existing statute. But I think that the speaker and the Senate president have a pretty good idea of what the intention is, and they'll be making those appointments as it is anyway. That may not be a fully satisfactory answer, but I think we understand the intent, and the Senate president and the speaker will have that authority regardless.
And while you're still with us, Mr. Stevens, pardon me, Rep. Reschke, I'm going to follow up with one more point that I heard in your previous comment. Can you describe to us the intent or the motivation moving from OFRI to Board of Forestry?
Certainly, Chair Nathanson. In terms of the authority to set the assessment is what I'm assuming. Yeah. Well, so I think part of the reason here is that we're taking an entity, OFRI, the board set its own rate. And we're moving two-thirds of the funding that was going to OFRI, and we're moving it to the Oregon Department of Forestry and the sub-account around Sound Forest Management. And so it seems to make sense that rate is going to shift in terms of who is authorizing it to the Board of Forestry rather than the OFRI board. And I guess one thing to note here, at least my understanding of this, and perhaps others can correct this if it's wrong, is that there is a statutorily authorized privilege tax here that goes to OFRI that's separate from the remainder of the privilege tax that funds, this is the harvest tax, that funds other things. And those have to be authorized every 2 years. And whereas this was permanently authorized and the OFRI board was just setting the rate. And so, there's still that limit that's built into statute, and it would just be the Board of Forestry now determining that annually based on, whatever factors they considered needed to be brought into consideration.
Thank you. Rep. Reschke followed by Rep. Valderrama.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would ask that we stand at ease for a moment.
Okay. For anyone watching, that means that standing at ease means we're going to stop our conversation. The committee will be quiet and not broadcasting for a short period. We're at ease.
Broadcasting.
Thank you, everyone. We're ready to resume discussion of, this is discussion only on House Bill 2357A. And let's see, I think where we were is Rep. Valderrama, were you next with a question?
Yes, Chair Nathanson, I believe so. I apologize, my camera got kind of dark all of a sudden. Just on this side of making sure that we have sound forestry practices. I think that we've heard a lot from advocates on both sides, and I do think that the bill seems to go in the right direction. But I'm curious to fix the overall larger systemic issues within the department, if we can, I don't know who exactly this question would be for, but if we can learn a little bit more about how we're ensuring that real climate science is being used, and how, if you can talk a little bit about those components of the bill.
Ms. McGovern, is that something you can speak to?
Chair Nathanson, Representative Valderrama, I think that essentially the policy traces of what sort of sideboards and restrictions to place on an agency like the OFRI or Department of Forestry, those are policy traces. And so a lot of the times in bills or in statute, there are sideboards and considerations that are explicitly stated. If they're not explicitly stated, sometimes departments have administrative rules. And then those are the kind of approaches that I know that you could use to ensure certain practices and approaches.
Follow-up question?
Sure.
Thank you. Just briefly. So could you explain what those sideboards are in this specific bill?
Representative Valderrama and Chair Nathanson, I don't think that this specific bill has changes to any of the sideboards or practices for OFRI, aside from the change in the funding designation and the rate determination.
Great. Thank you.
Representative Pham, and I want to make sure that if you have any other questions about the bill, that we make sure to get them out. And if Ms. McGovern has an answer, that's great. If she doesn't, she can get back to us later. But we will have one more bill today and just a half hour left in our meeting. Okay, Rep. Pham.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'll make my comment brief. I just wanted to say in response to Rep. Rushke, your comment about waiting a little bit more until we hear the audit. I can appreciate that perspective, and I also want to just say as a legislator, I have been getting so much pressure from my constituents who have been following the already ongoing years-long investigations of some of our news outlets, including the Oregonian and ProPublica investigations, which I'm sure many of you have read as well. And I think my constituents have just been really calling for some more accountability and some reforms. I think actually they feel like this is a compromise because it's not outright eliminating OFRI, but actually just trying to reform how the funding is allocated and trying to make sure there's a little more accountability in the processes. So I guess I would just argue, I would just mention that this is in many ways a response to ongoing investigations and evaluations of as we found in the media reports, the investigative reports, there were just egregious instances of illegal and unethical actions by OFRI officials. And so I think that's an important response to at least try to start reforms, see how they work, so that we can do some assessment then as well.
Rep. Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just in response, I'd say that reducing OFRI's budget by 2/3 would be more than a compromise. I think that's eviscerating the commission. Other things, I'll
go back to you. Rep. Reschke, I'm going to interrupt for a moment. The audio is being interrupted and it's not great. I want us to be able to hear every word. Does it help if you turn your camera off and just for a minute here while you're talking to us? Because we lost some of your words.
Thank you for that. And I'll turn my camera off and incoming video off so you can make faces at me and I just won't see them. Again, my thought was that taking two-thirds of the budget away from OFI is more than a compromise. It would be, as I said, eviscerating the commission and limiting what it can do. I understand that, but I think the Secretary of State's audit should help provide that roadmap, because that's supposed to be our state's neutral way of looking at things. And so I would be hopeful that that would provide us a roadmap that we can work together to find reforms for this and other agencies again, we can both support. Thank you.
Thank you for the comment. And please feel free to turn your camera back on. But I'm glad we got your statement clearly. Yes. Is that Rep. Levy? Yes, we can hear you.
You know, I thank you, Chair Nathanson, for the opportunity to speak. I would have to agree with Representative Reschke. I believe that the Secretary of State needs to finish her audit of OFRI before we move to do something with OFRI. We may find that her audit is stricter than this bill. We also may find that her audit doesn't agree with the newspaper articles, but I would urge us to not hastily do something that we might have to go back and fix later.
Thank you, Rep. Levy. Is there any more discussion before I close this work session and move to the next one? I'm not seeing any. Okay, I'm closing the work session on House Bill 2357A, and I'm opening a work session on House Bill 2021A.
Thank you, Chair. Members of the committee, you might recall that House Bill 2021A is the bill that sets the path for electricity producers to reduce emissions by 100%, starting with 80% in 2030 and moving to 100% by 2040 below baseline as determined by the Department of Environmental Quality. There's other components in there, including small community-based resources in the renewable portfolio standard. We have a Dash 52 that creates a state policy that the state engage in meaningful conversation with recognized Indian tribes for permitting siting and construction of new energy projects. It also takes into account or specifies that the clean energy plans must take into account risk-based assessment of resiliency opportunities. And it removes from the bill companies, electric companies that are serving less than 25,000 customers. And moves the renewable portfolio standard, the community renewable, the small scale renewable energy in the renewable portfolio standard on a capacity basis from 8% to 10%, and also moves out the target date from 2025 to 2030. And I will just note that it has no revenue impact, and we have just received the fiscal impact. I haven't had a chance to look at it. I think it's just coming in now, a couple of seconds ago.
Okay, well, we'll give you a few minutes to look at it while we have some conversation. I do see a hand up. Let's see if I can identify the source. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My understanding is within this piece of legislation that our rural electric cooperatives have been exempted out. Is that accurate?
And Rep. Marsh, because Ms. McGovern is trying to work on reviewing the fiscal impact statement, would you please answer that question?
Sure.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson. Happy to answer the question, Rep. Smith. The COUs are not required to comply with the mandates in the bill. However, there is a community renewable investment fund that they will be eligible to apply for. So they get the best of all worlds, I think we could say.
Well, you just answered my second question. You're good. thank you, Madam. Thank you, Rep. Marsh.
Absolutely.
And Rep. Marsh, let's just make sure that for anyone listening to the meeting who isn't really deep into the details and the government jargon, let's define COU and IOU. You want to do that?
Thank you, Chair Nathanson. So the entities that are affected by the mandates in the bill are two companies, Pacific Power and PGE. Those are our investor-owned utilities, or IOUs. Our consumer-owned utilities, including the co-ops, the municipals, the people's utility districts, are not required to comply with the mandates of the bill. They will be eligible, however, to apply for the $50 million investment fund.
Thank you. Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I don't know if this is for Representative Marsh or for Ms. McGovern, but in the dash 52s, I believe that long-term storage and short-term storage were removed from the bill. And just wondering what the thinking was behind that, if that's accurate. And again, I think those things are really important if we're gonna go down this road to have storage. So when the wind isn't blowing or the sun isn't shining, we still can turn on the lights or use our computers.
Chair Nathanson, would you like me, may I respond to that?
Yes, sure.
Thank you, Rep. Reschke. Really, that was a streamlining effort in the bill. We know that the definition of non-emitting electricity inherently has to include storage, because storage is going to be a necessary technology as we transition to clean energy. And we decided it just wasn't necessary to name storage in the planning section of the bill explicitly, because we, again, we know the technology will be adopted as part of future energy projects, as an example, PGE's Wheat Ridge facility. So I think you can knock that up to streamlining.
Okay, thank you very much for clarifying.
Rep. Pham.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. And this is a question for Rep. Marsh. Rep. Marsh, I appreciate this bill's the goal. As somebody who that cares deeply about climate change and leaving a livable planet for our children, and actually for our generation, I commend the goals. I also appreciated the mention of tribal consultation in the bill. In the amendment, it addresses tribal consultation. And it there are two citations, one in Oregon statute and one in federal. Is the language intended to apply to projects that qualify under either or both statutes?
Thank you, Chair Nathanson, Rep. Pham. It's an or. So different projects will go through, are defined in the state and federal statutes. So the requirement for consultation applies to projects that are affected or defined by either the state or federal standard. And I should note that the language, the tribal language, codifies but doesn't change current requirements for consultation. We thought it was important to be really explicit that we didn't want to repeat the harms that we have foisted on tribal tribes and tribal lands from past energy investments, and that we wanted to really just be clear that the kind of consultation that is required at the state and federal levels will apply in these cases.
Thank you.
Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just going to make a statement. I'm looking at the revenue impact for the dash A52s and notice there's no revenue impact. So again, I question why this bill is in this committee, but just wanted to put that on the record. Thank you.
Thanks. And Rep. Smith, do you have a question or comment?
Madam Chair, think I would know how to put my hand down. It's maybe by the end of
the hand just disappeared again.
Sorry.
Any other questions or conversation before we might hear a motion? I'll wait just a minute to see if Rep. Levy also is wanting to be recognized. Rep. Reschke, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a clarification that the motion will be to have a be referred to Ways and Means. Is that correct?
You mean with a referral?
Referral to Ways and Means. That's what I meant. Yes.
Mr. Alanak, would you please respond to that?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Thank you very much. I just want to make sure I was clear on that. So thank you.
The words won't appear in the motion, though.
They need to be in the motion because it does not currently have the referral.
It's not in the motion that I have in front of me.
I apologize. That's our mistake in the script. The dash A52 would need to be adopted, and then it would be due pass as amended with a referral to Ways and Means.
Okay.
And Madam Chair, I just got a message from Representative Levy. Apparently she's got knocked off the conversation, so if she could be let back in, that would be helpful.
Oh, there is someone waiting in the lobby. I see that. But now in the room, Representative Levy, is that you in the room with us again?
Yes, it is. Thank you very much. I had to switch to regular phone.
Okay, great. While we're, good, Rep. Valderrama, I see your hand is up now.
Yes, Chair Nathanson, thank you. On the question earlier around why the bill is in this particular committee, I was hoping also to get a little bit of clarity there. If we can have staff answer that, my understanding is because there are several incentives related to this particular committee, but I think it would be helpful to get a little bit more staff clarification on that too, if possible.
That was a request for comment from Ms. McGovern, I think.
Yes, thank you, Representative Valderrama, Chair Nathanson. When the bill did arrive in this committee, and generally speaking, I review this bill and all the other bills to see if there's a revenue impact. We issued a no revenue impact prior as the bill was moving through committees. However, in looking for, as the multiple amendments were coming through, and also in looking at the potential reach that this type of bill could have, just in terms of the ratepayer impact, if any, down the road, that I just gave careful scrutiny to that type of issue or concern. There are no revenue impacts. There are no tax revenue impacts from this bill, but that's the type of analysis that we look at in looking at something like the approval of investments from the Public Utility Commission through a sort of investment program that might follow after this bill were to pass. That being said, when a bill arrives in this committee, I don't know, and I'm not privy to how those decisions are made from policymakers. And also Chris might know a little bit more about why bills show up in our committee. I deal with them after they arrive in our committee.
Madam Chair, I don't know if you wanted me to add something.
If there's anything you have to add,
I think there was an open question as to the amendments that might be considered. And at the end of the day, we have the bill before you, but I don't know if that was the case all along.
Thank you. Before we're finishing up work on this bill, I'd like to make a statement about how I've been looking at this bill, and not related to a potential revenue impact or ratepayer impact, but something else that I would have been looking at when the bill arrived on the floor, for example. I have for a long time been very interested, concerned, supportive of efforts to avoid building new energy facilities. I've been very interested in conservation and storage in particular. While I have been concerned at times to see language not included specifically about the value of investing in conservation efforts and the need for energy storage and how some of that relates to resilience. Actually, sometimes it works in favor of or against more assurance of resilience. I have thought a lot about this bill as amendments were coming through. And one thing that is, I suppose, of a lot of importance to me about this bill is that it, I think the phrase is technology neutral. Rather than saying thou shalt build this kind of thing or not build that kind of thing, it's allowing industry to use existing and develop new technologies, whether it's to create energy or conserve and save energy or store energy. We don't know what all the technologies will be tomorrow and 5 years and 10 years out. And I think that the way the material is that we've received it, especially in amendments, is technology neutral. I think that's a good way to go. Is there other discussion? Rep. Marsh.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson. I just wanted to make a comment about something that we really haven't talked about with this bill, and that is the potential it has to really bring women and minorities into the renewables field. This is an area that hasn't been well-staffed with women and non-white people. A little data that I pulled up, 73% of the current solar white workforce is white. Only 26% of that workforce is women, compared to 47% in the U.S. workforce. Senior executives, you see it even more so, with 88% being white and 80% being men. So my point being, I think especially with the fund, we have the opportunity to sort of right the barriers that have stood in the way of individuals with diversity being involved in the renewable field. And as we look toward the future and the jobs and the businesses that will be fueled by a turn to 100% renewable electricity, there's really a tremendous opportunity here. And when I said earlier that Rep. Reschke's tax credits could be used for training, I was quite serious. It's a coming field, and the opportunities there for really expanding the kind of people who have been involved in the field is one that I think is really supported by the bill and the fund. So I think that's a whole additional aspect that is supported by the bill, and I wanted to call it out.
Representative Levy, while we're all talking and I'm able to see hands go up on the screen, I don't want to pass you by if you're asking to be recognized. I'll wait just a few seconds.
Thank you very much, Chair. I guess my one comment is that I really appreciate Rep. Marsh working with the cooperative since I get my electricity from a cooperative, and quite a few of my constituents get their electricity from cooperatives. And I've really appreciated the fact that she has worked diligently with them to find some workable ground for all of us. So thank you very much.
Thank you for the comment. Any other questions or discussion? Rep. Pham, would you like to make a motion?
Yes, Chair Nathanson, I move the dash A52 amendment to House Bill 2021A.
Thank you. Vice Chair Pham moves the dash A52 amendment to House Bill 2021A. Is there discussion on this motion? Rep. Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just going to be a no on this. Taking out the long-term storage is concerning for me, and I understand Representative Marsh's explanation to streamline it, but I think there would have been ways to streamline it and keep it in, so I'll be a no. Thank you.
Thanks for your comment. I think it's pretty clear from my statement before that I'm interested in storage as well. Any other discussion?
Chair Nathanson, this is Representative Levy. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Go ahead.
So I must have missed that part about the long-term storage being out when my phone was going in and out of service. And I'm also would prefer long-term storage. So if we could put that back in, I would be a yes on this.
Any other discussion? Let's have a roll call vote.
Representative Levy.
Levy votes no.
Representative Marsh.
Marsh votes yes.
Representative Smith.
Representative Smith votes aye.
Representative Valderrama.
Valderrama votes aye.
Vice Chair Pham.
Pham votes aye.
Vice Chair Reschke.
Reschke votes no.
Madam Chair Nathanson.
Nathanson votes aye. Motion passes. And the next motion should be one, I believe, that is to move House Bill 2021A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and referral to Joint Committee on Ways and Means. Yes. Rep. Pham, would you like to make that motion?
Yes, Chair Nathanson, I move House Bill 2021 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Thank you. Vice Chair Pham made that motion, which included referral to Ways and Means. Any discussion? Let's have a roll call vote.
Representative Levy.
Levy votes no.
Representative Marsh.
Marsh votes yes.
Representative Smith.
Representative Smith votes aye.
Representative Valderrama.
Valderrama votes aye.
Vice Chair Pham.
Pham votes aye.
Vice Chair Reschke.
Reschke votes no.
Madam Chair Nathanson.
Nathanson votes aye. Motion passes. And we don't need to assign a carrier to this one. It's making another stop. That completes our work on this bill. I'm closing the work session on House Bill 2021A. Mr. Alanak, is there any other business before the committee before we adjourn?
No, Madam Chair, that completes your agenda. I would just signal, I think, I still need confirmation from the chairs, but I think next week JCTE may be starting. So if the members can be keep an eye out for that.
Right. You're all members of the Joint Committee on Tax Expenditures, as well as the House Committee on Revenue. Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just wondering if Mr. Alanak, you had an idea on the schedule on that, or is that still to be determined?
The plan right now, and we will be issuing agendas, the plan right now is to meet during the Wednesday revenue time slot at 3:15. So Wednesday at 3:15. So for everybody in this committee, same schedule, just a different name for the committee on Wednesdays.
And some senators, right?
And a bigger room with more people, yeah.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
There goes the neighborhood. Bring those guys from the country club over. Cranky old people. Sorry.
We should have muted your microphone.
I'm in your 11 terms. I can call them cranky old people.
are there any other comments from the committee that might be germane to our work? I'm not seeing any. Thank you all. We're adjourned.